Today we look at the heroic and tragic figure of the Marquis de Condorcet, father of social choice. Condorcet is born in 1743 and he dies in 1794. As a young man, he makes important contributions to the theory of differential equations and to integral calculus. He's elected to the French Royal Academy of Sciences, and his works bring him a worldwide reputation as a mathematician and as a scientist. In the early 1770s, he befriends Voltaire and Turgot, and he's appointed by Turgot to the government, and he becomes radicalized. Remember, this is a time the American Revolution is in the stirrings, the French Revolution is coming, the ancient regime is beginning to crumble, everything in politics and life is changing, and Condorcet wants to be a part of it. And he begins to write extensively on political matters, and he really becomes an outstanding proponent of Enlightenment ideas. He supports natural rights, laissez-faire economics. He's an abolitionist. He's a feminist way ahead of his time. He advocates reforms of criminal law. Remember, this is a time when people are still being burned at the stake for things such as blasphemy, so-called. He argues for reason and mathematics to be applied to politics. He's an outstanding proponent of the idea of progress, that science and reason can make mankind better. And in fact, Malthus's first book is written in opposition to Condorcet. As the American Revolution begins, he becomes a friend to Thomas Jefferson and later to Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine, in fact, lives at his house after the American Revolution. Condorcet writes on the Bill of Rights and how important a Bill of Rights is, and he influences the adoption of the American Bill of Rights. He then takes a leading role in the French Revolution. In terms of social science, he really makes two important contributions, which together make him the father of social choice, and indeed the father of what might be said to be both branches of social choice. First, the Condorcet-Jury theorem, and then the mathematical analysis of voting, which led to the Condorcet paradox and the importance of the independence of a relevant alternatives condition. Let's take a look at each of these. The Condorcet-Jury theorem is an information-theoretic defense of democracy. Condorcet says, assume we have a choice between two outcomes, and that one of the outcomes is objectively better than the other. How well does majority rule work in choosing the better outcome? Condorcet sets out a mathematical model to answer this question. We can illustrate the Condorcet-Jury theorem with this mathematical example. We're going to graph voter competence on the horizontal axis, where we measure voter competence as the probability that an individual voter will choose the correct outcome, anywhere from 0 to 100%. On the vertical axis, we're going to measure the probability that the correct outcome wins in a majority rule election. And we're going to change the number of electors, the number of voters. We're starting off with n is equal to 4. So for example, if each voter has just a 50% chance, coin flip, of choosing the correct outcome, and if we also decide ties randomly, then not surprisingly, the probability that the correct outcome wins is just 50%. Similarly, you won't be too surprised if each individual voter has a 0.55 chance of choosing the correct outcome. That is, they're a little bit better than a coin toss, then in a group of 4 voters, the majority rule outcome will also be about 0.55. But notice the following. Let's look at what happens as we increase the number of voters. Well, very, very quickly, as we increase the number of voters, the probability that the majority rule outcome is the correct outcome goes to 100%. So notice, even though each individual voter here has a probability of choosing the correct outcome of just 0.55, the probability that the correct outcome is chosen by majority rule is closer to 85%. Indeed, as the number of voters continues to go up, the probability that the correct outcome is chosen, even when each individual voter is not very competent, the probability that majority rule chooses the correct outcome is going to 100%, getting closer and closer to 100%. Now, here's another implication which Condorcet certainly would have been aware of. let's compare rule by a king with majority rule. And let's suppose that the king is more competent. Who is going to be better, majority rule or a fairly competent king? Well, let's go back to where we just have 100 voters, and notice, okay, that even though, again, each voter has a probability of choosing the correct outcome of just 0.55, 55%, the probability of majority rule choosing the correct outcome is about 85%. That means if the king has a competency of less than 85%, it's better to go with majority rule. So rule by a bunch of ignorant masses, or almost ignorant masses, can actually be very, very smart. This is what would later be called the wisdom of the crowds. When you have a big enough crowd, and each person in that crowd is just slightly more likely than chance to choose the correct outcome, the crowd itself is very likely to choose the correct outcome, more likely than even a competent king. So Condorcet's jury theorem was a mathematical defense of majority rule. Condorcet's information theoretic defense of democracy led him to a quite different question. Let's assume that there is no objectively better choice, in the sense that even if the voters had perfect information, they would not have a unanimous choice. How then should they choose? What is the best choice among three or more outcomes when preferences among the voters differ? This led Condorcet to some paradoxes of group choice. Condorcet was led to his discoveries by noting that many common voting systems had undesirable properties. Here's a modern example from the Minnesota gubernatorial election of 1998, famous because it led to the election of Jesse "The Body" Ventura, the wrestler, as governor. This is a plausible reconstruction of what voter preferences look like. So 35% of the people had Coleman ranked first, Humphrey second, and Ventura last. 28% ranked Humphrey first, Coleman second, and Ventura third. 20% had the ranking Ventura, Coleman, Humphrey. 17% Ventura, Humphrey, Coleman last. Now, given the plurality rule election, Ventura won the election because he had 37% of the votes, compared to Humphrey at 35%, and compared to Coleman at 35%, and Humphrey at 28%. Now, Condorcet asked, is this a good outcome? Was this a good representation of the will of the voters? And in this case, he would have answered, no. Why not? Well, suppose that we put Coleman versus Ventura in a head-to-head pairwise election. Well, in this case, Coleman would have crushed Ventura with 63% of the vote to Ventura's 37%. Why? Well, if it had just been Coleman versus Ventura, that is, if Humphrey had not been in the election, most of the Humphrey voters had Coleman ranked second. So the Humphrey voters would have gone to Coleman, giving Coleman an overwhelming advantage over Ventura. Suppose instead that Coleman had not been in the election and that it had been Humphrey going to head-to-head versus Ventura. In that case, Humphrey again would have crushed Ventura. So what we have here is that in pairwise elections, Jesse Ventura would have lost to any of the other candidates in the election. In honor of Condorcet, we say that Jesse Ventura was a Condorcet loser. Though I wouldn't say that to Ventura's face. That is, by a Condorcet loser, we mean a candidate who would lose compared to, in a pairwise election, against any other candidate. So what we have here is that plurality rule can elect Condorcet losers. A second function that we can see here, suppose that Coleman had been versus Humphrey. Suppose that Ventura had not been in the election. Well, in that case, Coleman would have had 35% of voters ranked him first, okay? And then without Ventura in the race, 20% of the Ventura voters would have also gone to Coleman, giving Coleman 55% over Humphrey's 45%. In other words, had it been Coleman versus Humphrey, Coleman would have won. And had it been Coleman versus Ventura, Coleman would have won. So Coleman was a Condorcet winner. a Condorcet winner being any candidate who beats every other candidate in pairwise elections. So we see once again that plurality rule can fail to elect Condorcet winners. It can elect Condorcet losers, and it can fail to elect Condorcet winners. So Condorcet thought that this was a bad property of elections. And he looked around for a rule. He suggested an appropriate voting system would always elect the Condorcet winner. Let's take a closer look at that. Condorcet thought that the candidate who beats every other candidate in pairwise elections, that that candidate should win the election, that the Condorcet winner should be the best choice. Sounds plausible, but Condorcet found a problem. Let's consider this simple example of three voters voting over the question of apples, bananas, or coconuts. So voter one prefers apples to bananas and bananas to coconuts. Voter two has bananas ranked first, coconuts second, apples third, and finally voter three ranks coconuts first, apples second, and bananas third. Now let's suppose these voters take a vote of apples versus bananas. Voter one, apples is their favorite, so of course voter one votes for apples. Voter two prefers bananas to apples, so they're going to vote for bananas. Voter three, between apples and bananas, they prefer apples. Apples are ranked higher, so voter three votes for apples. So by 2-1, apples wins the election. Now let's take bananas versus coconuts. Well, by similar reasoning, you can see that bananas will win the election. Bananas beat coconuts. Now, if apples beat bananas, and if bananas beat coconuts, should it therefore not be the case that apples beat coconuts? Apples are better than bananas. Bananas are better than coconuts. So shouldn't apples be better than coconuts? No. Or in fact, with group choice, that does not necessarily happen. Take a look. Apples versus coconuts. Voter one votes for apples. Voter two votes for coconuts. Voter three votes for coconuts. So coconuts win. So we have here a failure of transitivity. Or another way of putting this is, there is no Condorcet winner. There is no candidate who beats every other candidate. A beats B, B beats C, but C beats A. There is no candidate who beats every other candidate. How then should voters decide what is the best outcome when there is no Condorcet winner? Condorcet did more than give an example of the failure of a Condorcet winner to exist. He analyzed in some detail why this was the case, tracing it to the failure of what we would today call the independence of a relevant alternatives condition. Maybe we'll do that another day. Are there voting systems under which a Condorcet winner always exists? That's a natural question. Do such voting systems have good properties? Questions like this led to the surprise of Arrow's theorem, again, which we'll take up another day. Let's conclude by looking a little bit more at Condorcet's life and how it ended. Condorcet, as I have said, was a fierce speaker for the Enlightenment values of reason, free speech, individual rights, and the rule of law. He was a Republican, but he opposed killing the king. He was also a moderate. And he criticized the Constitution, which was proposed by Robespierre and his party during the French Revolution. His criticism of Robespierre led to a warrant for his arrest. And while in hiding, Condorcet wrote his final work, Sketch for a Historical Perspective on the Progress of the Human Mind, perhaps the greatest statement of the idea of progress. In his final work, Condorcet lays out how science and reason will bring enlightenment eventually to the entire world. And he says, how welcome to the philosopher is this picture of the human race, freed from all its chains, released from the domination of chance and of the enemies of its progress, advancing with a firm and sure step in the path of truth, virtue, and happiness. How this spectacle consoles him for the errors, crimes, and injustices that still defile the earth, of which he is often the victim. In contemplation of this picture, he finds the reward for his efforts on behalf of the progress of reason and the defense of liberty. This contemplation affords him an asylum where the memory of his persecutors cannot pursue him, where he forgets humanity tormented and corrupted by greed, fear, or envy, to live in the mind with humanity restored to the rights and dignity of its nature. There he truly lives in communion with his fellows, in a paradise that his reason has been able to create and his love of humankind. It was shortly after writing this that Condorcet's persecutors caught up with him. They threw him in jail, where he, within days, died at the hands of the Reign of Terror. Here are some further references. David Williams's book, Condorcet and Modernity, is good on placing Condorcet in the French context, less good on his contributions to social thought, social science. You can read some of Condorcet's works at the online Library of Liberty for free. This paper by Arnold Erkin on Condorcet and Jefferson is very interesting. Nitzan Perush, this book, Collective Decision Making and Economic Outlook, furthers Condorcet's information theoretic defense of democracy, looking at various questions like, what if some voters are better at making decisions than other voters? Should they get more votes? MacLean and Erkin collect a bunch of the classics of social choice. Lewis Carroll, of Alice in Wonderland fame, also wrote on social choice, Black, Condorcet, Arrow, and so forth. For a good introduction to voting theory, I recommend Don Sari's book, Decisions and Elections. And at MR University, you'll find other material on Kenneth Arrow and Arrow's theorem. Thanks.